Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Thanks to Kenneth Murray of the Chargers for joining us there earlier. Their first-round draft pick, 23rd overall. Mama Momo's hanging out today. And, of course, this segment brought to us by our friends at Nature Valley. The satisfying crunch of Nature Valley Crunchy Bars can keep your family going, which means more outside fun for you. And with whole grain oats and real delicious honey, it's tasty, too. Nature Valley Oats and Honey Crunchy Bars. So, Mama Momo, let's finally talk about mega divisions in Major League Baseball after teasing it for three straight segments. Bob Nightingale of USA Today is reporting that Major League Baseball is considering a return by the end of June or by July 2nd, according to his reporting. And in this particular case, Major League Baseball would have three mega divisions. So basically, there would be no American League and National League. The East would be bunched together, both leagues. The Central would be bunched together, both leagues. And the West would be bunched together, both leagues. So in the Dodgers division, you'd have the Dodgers, Angels, Giants, A's, Padres, Diamondbacks, Rockies, Rangers, Astros, the cheating Astros, and the Seattle Mariners. That would be the West division. What do you say, Momo? Are you in or are you out?
I like this idea of the geographic division. I like this a lot. I love the fact that the Astros would be in that division, right? Because that would change everything. How many more times would the Dodgers get to play them again?
So think about it. They're going to play 100 games.
Yeah.
So they would play only within their division. So if you're going to play about 100 games, you're going to play them each, it looks like, right? About 11, 12 times, right? That sounds right.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I like that. So I think, isn't the idea that you would have like three different sites, like maybe one in Arizona, one in like Dallas?
No, that's out. Florida? That's out. Oh. That would just be for spring training. This report has them playing in their home parks, which is why that they've regionalized the divisions the way they did.
That's interesting.
In their to home limit parks. Travel.
So that is a little harder to wrap my head around because I think there are some that means all the states are going to be on the same page. That means, you know, they're going to have it worked out with California, you know, and Washington and certain places the same as Florida would, where I know each state has different governors and different policies and has been handling this very differently. So that's why I thought it would be in one spot. It just felt like that was the direction that we easiest to go, because now it's each different state and local government's going to be involved.
Yeah. I think that will be fascinating. Now, travel will, you know, it would be a little more challenging than the plan to play in one or two or three specific places, because the local communities will have to ensure to the best of their ability that the hotels these teams stay in, right, are properly maintained, right?
Yep.
That the employees are also in the proper health, right? I think that there's way more moving parts to doing it this way.
Correct.
Which would be the one challenge that I would see.
Yeah, I agree. But if you did it in local markets, then you theoretically could see your family. So
correct.
I think to me, this is going to be the biggest issue is bubble to bubble or not to bubble, right? That is the question. Bubbling makes it so much harder on everybody involved and their families because you would be away for a long time. And baseball being the longest season, which hasn't started yet, would be longer than basketball, would be longer than football, right? Like this would be like a prolonged period of time away. But if you don't bubble, then you have a lot more risk involved. You have a lot more people involved. Like if you're going home to your family every night, your family then has to be tested and, you know, their points of exposure as well. Anybody who you come into contact with is a point of exposure. So how are they going to handle testing for that? How would they handle the rules for that? Would everybody you come in contact with, would you have to be subject to the same rules of engagement. Like, it's just a lot more complicated, but it is socially easier to do, right? Like, then you don't have the issue with Clayton Kershaw saying, I don't want to be away from my kids for 6 months, which is understandable. That's 6 months away. That's hard. So yeah, I think the bubble makes the most sense just in terms of actually pulling this off. But in terms of what players would agree to, the idea that they could be in their home markets actually does sound pretty appealing.
Yeah, him and Trout, as you mentioned, Kershaw, clearly were adamantly against this bubble theory. Mm-hmm. So Kershaw has weighed in about the most recent scenario, and here's what Clayton said.
I've been figuring out a little bit, and, you know, I kind of think we're going to come back. I really do, and I'm optimistic about that. And, you know, I'm kind of preparing like we're going to be back in July at some point. I have no basis for that. It's just kind of what I feel. And so I'm kind of working off of that. And I really do. I feel optimistic about it. And, you know, just trying to keep that optimism going.
So, you know, he's saying he's got no basis, but clearly the report was out there. So, I mean, he's basing it off of that. Mm-hmm. And one would assume that Major League Baseball's had these conversations with Clayton Kershaw and Mike Trout and those types and has said to them, okay, can we figure out, let us try to figure out a happy medium. So that way we can limit travel and you can potentially see your team, your family, right? And I think that this is, if you're trying to please everybody, this is probably the best case scenario.
Right. This is, but it also has the most risk involved.
Sure.
Right? Because you're going to have, if you have people who are going to and from and you're not bubbling as much, then the potential of like literally one player getting reinfected or getting infected and then everybody having to re-quarantine and shut down again, that's much higher.
So let me jump in on that. So Passan was on with us recently, and right. I asked him about that. And again, he's just relaying the messages that he had gotten from Major League Baseball people, that they believe, according to the conversations they've had with the CDC and the health officials and things of that nature, that if someone does test positive on mm-hmm. the team in baseball,
right.
that because of expanded rosters, they're going to go 40-man rosters at this point.
Right.
And that they also feel that as if it's just one person or even two people, that they can quarantine those one or two people. And what they would do is ramp up regular testing, temperature checks for the rest of the team, the staff, et cetera, and allow them to continue as long as they passed those tests and the whatever medical procedures that was bestowed upon them.
Yeah, I could see that, right? Like, you know, if they have rapid testing, if let's say one or two people got infected, or, you know, let's not even, it doesn't even have to be players. It could just be, you know, a trainer or a coach or, you know, coach's wife or whoever it is, right? Then everybody else would, you know, I think they would be having rapid testing all the time. I think they would probably be testing people at pretty regular intervals. And so you could figure out if that infection had spread, right, pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. You'd know within a matter of hours or days or whoever, you know, whatever it is, how many people may have been, you know, who had been exposed to that person, if it's spreading, and you could just quarantine all of them.
Because it's certainly easy to trace when you know, when you're all together. You know what I'm saying? Like, that part will be easy.
Right. You know who it is. So, and I think that there's going to be some level of regular testing that's going to take place.
Sure.
Even while you're in the bubble, you have to continue to test. So,
right.
It's not going to be pleasant. I wonder if it's always going to be the nasal swab or whatever.
Oh my God. Have you seen the video that Rex Chapman tweeted out about the military guys getting tested? Woo! I mean, he tweets a lot of videos, which he's awesome at, and I love Rex Chapman. But go find it; it's on his timeline. You'll see it for yourself, and you'll be like, Jamel tweeted, "If this isn't a PSA for quote, stay your ass at home, nothing will be." Which I thought was kind of funny, but yeah, it'll be interesting to kind of see. But this could be the happy medium that Major League Baseball was looking for. Let me ask you this, Momo, and how do you think history will look at the champions of 2020, considering everything that's going on?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think it's going to be an asterisk year no matter what, right? I think there is going to be a sense that, you know, this year is just fundamentally messed up, and it doesn't feel like any other year. Baseball is going to feel much more different than any other sport, right? Especially if you go to these mega divisions and we throw out National League and American League and not, none of that matters anymore. I mean, that's weird, right? It's just going to be so different. I personally think in basketball, it's going to depend on how things play out. And one of the issues that I try to keep bringing up every time we talk about this is player safety, which is when we had the lockout, there were like a lot of injuries right after the lockout because they rushed the training camp and guys didn't have the same amount of time to ramp up and to get into that kind of shape. We cannot rush back. They have to give players enough time to get back into shape and to ramp back up because, I mean, the last thing any of us want to see is like rush back and then you have like five significant injuries to key players on teams that were contending for championships, right? Like, we just don't want to put players in that position. And then now it's like, what are we even doing? If you know, I don't want to name names or even put any of that out there, but like that is a real risk with you know, people being off as long as they are and then jumping right back into a playoffs. Plus, it's going to be super weird to play without fans.
It is going to be weird. I will say this, in basketball, less weird, and I'll explain why, okay?
Okay.
So every year, the last couple of years, I have been asked to call the G League Winter Showcase with PJ Carlissimo. And he and I go down to Vegas, and we're in the Mandalay Bay, and they have two courts, and we're set up, and we're doing the games on ESPN2 and ESPNU. And there's no fans in there. There's just the teams, the team staff, you know, GMs from around the league and front office types and things of that nature. But, you know, and there's some occasional reaction, right? Like if someone has a crazy dunk or something. But, like, it's just usually oohs and ahs.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about it is this, and PJ and I always talk about it every year. Like, the first game is weird for a few minutes because of no fans. But then we always dive into the same conversation of, it's awesome because then you can hear the players communicating. You can hear the coaches yelling at them. You can hear little things that you would never be able to hear if there was a crowd. And that kind of communication, I think, would be fascinating for fans, like diehard fans particularly, to listen to.
Yeah, that's true. And plus, you know, if it really got weird with like no music, no this, it, you know, they could pump in, you could put a bunch of music on in the background. You could have every single game, you know, put to a soundtrack, you know, that would help. But you're right. You hear the sounds of the game. I guess the only thing I could compare it to is when I go to Team USA and we get to watch the scrimmages sometime or practices.
Right.
Like, you know, it'd just be like watching practice all the time, you know, except for these games count.
Yeah, but I'll tell you this, and it didn't. The intensity didn't change, because those guys weren't playing in front of crowds. Now they play in front of small crowds in most of these G League teams anyway.
Right,
but zero fans, right? Like zero crowd. They probably don't play in very regularly. So I just feel like again, there's just going to be a different like feel to it, and I just think that the trash talk will be fascinating because you'll hear all of it. All of that stuff will be cool if it happens that way.
Yeah. And I think everybody, there's a sort of patriotic feeling too that the athletes and the people who will be involved in, you know, sports coming back will have is like, you know, there was this period of time where sports felt very irrelevant, you know, the first couple of weeks, at least while everybody was dealing with the new reality and what this really means. But as this goes on and as people are dealing with the restrictions on their lives and their new, you know, way of being, I think it'll be a nice escape for people. You know, like, didn't you go through your same, the first couple of weeks I was just glued to cable news.
Right.
I watched it every night. It was always on. And then after a while I was like, I got to stop watching this.
Yeah. Yeah. For your own mental health.
Yeah. Mental health. Literally, like, I have not watched cable news in 3 weeks at all.
I'm not there yet. I watch the updates from Garcetti and Newsom on the local news on ABC7. And then I give myself like a total of like an hour a day on cable news.
Yeah, I read. So I feel like I'm getting my news. I read the New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times. I read and the LA Daily News too, actually. I read the two LA papers a lot because I want to know what's going on locally. So subscribe to your local newspaper, by the way.
Support
journalism around the country. It's really important right now. I read and I feel like I get enough. Like I feel like, okay, I know what's going on. And it's like really helped me and changed my life to not be watching TV like that. I watch at night. I watch Scott Van Pelt almost every night. I love it. I love tuning into SportsCenter and just having a little escapist, you know, let's talk about sports here. And even if there's its connection to the virus, it's still nice to just go into that world. And then I watch Bravo shows. I watch Below Deck. I watch Top Chef, right? I watch those kind of stuff. Some Netflix here and there, but like, I just don't want to watch anything serious right now. I think our whole lives are serious.
I was watching Superbad last night.
Yeah, that's right. That's perfect. Perfect. Like, I mean, last night I watched the latest episode of Below Deck, a sailing yacht, and it's great. And then I actually started watching the new show on ABC called The Baker and the Beauty. Do you know that one? You should watch that one. It's about Cubanos.
Oh, I'll check it out.
Yeah.
I'll check it out. That sounds right up my alley. So
yeah,
I will...
you can watch the first three episodes I've been on so far. So I watched the first one and a half and then I had to go to bed. But it was one of my favorite, this is a random story, but it was originally an Israeli show. And I watched that Israeli show on Netflix. It's charming. It is a really wonderful premise. It's kind of like Homeland, which was originally an Israeli show. Mm-hmm. And they just basically took the exact same plot
and just did it here. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So the difference is in the Israeli show, it's like like Israeli actors, Israeli families, etc. This is like set in Miami. A lot of the characters have the same names as they do on the Israeli show, except for like it's different. So like for me, it's hard because I'm comparing it to the original show. I like it though. It's just it's charming. It's cute, and I like the fact that they did it with a Cuban family down in Miami. So
I'll check it out.
Anyway, there's my plug.
I'm in.
The and people, and the beauty.
People are definitely. I'm in. I'll start watching it, and we will be all watching The Last Dance. 6 million people watched it again. Let's dive into that because I think we're getting to the point where things are getting a little too petty, Momo, and I want to get into that. Plus, you've got I know you like the next episodes that are coming up, so we'll let you kind of tease some of that. So we're back in 4 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Kobe Carl is going to join us in a little bit, head coach of the South Bay Lakers. It'll be cool to chat with him. So, couple things I want to get into here, but I got to pay some bills. It's all presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they make things easier. They help you bundle your home, car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or call them at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. And it is time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Again, no contract, no compromise, Straight Talk Wireless. So, Momo, you and I have talked a lot about the last dance, the first few episodes of The Last Dance. And in the most recent episode, clearly Michael and Isaiah still don't like each other. Like, that was fairly obvious to anyone watching, including Michael calling him an a-hole at one point for saying something that he said on a video, or that if he was alluding to something on a video, that he would refer to him still as an a-hole. Isaiah's been doing the rounds, okay, trying to defend himself here. And look, I am a Jordan guy. Like, Jordan is the greatest player of all time. I do feel like, though, that Michael Jordan is doing Michael Jordan things. He's flexing because he's Michael Jordan and he can flex. And he has kind of drawn this thing out for a really, really long time. Like, it feels like this seems excessive and maybe even a little petty by Michael. Are you feeling me on that or no?
Interesting. You know what? I think that this is real. And I think that, you know, Isaiah, Bill Laimbeer, all those guys had a chance to like change their historical record. And instead of doing that, they just kind of like stuck to their stories. And like, to me, like a documentary that waits 23 years to come out, right? It's like everybody has a chance to like kind of rewrite their own history and tell their own story, like of things that were not popular in the moment. And like, I don't know. It's just like, I had no problem with what Isaiah said. I thought it was a good defense in the story of like, look, that's what the Celtics did to us. That's what we were going to do to the Bulls. I know now in the light of day, it doesn't look as good, but that's just how it was back then. Like, fine. Just leave it at that. Just that's it. You could have said, I wish we wouldn't have done that. He could have gone the other way, but he gave a good explanation for why they did it. he said he kind of regretted it, and that's it. I don't even know why he needs to do 17 more interviews. I think he's only doing these interviews because Jordan like crushed him after he saw the video of it, right? Like when they show it to Michael, he kind of crushed him again. I don't care what he says now, it's all BS, right? Like that's what he said on the show. I think it's more Isaiah perpetuating it by doing all these extra interviews.
Right. It would have been done after a day. Right. Yeah. It would have been out of the zeitgeist after
Let
a day.
Go. You said what you said. That's how you felt. Like, here's how we felt then. Here's how I feel now. Boom, done. Like, the more you talk about it, the bigger story it gets. Like, thou doth protest too much. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like with Isaiah, it's like nothing you say now is going to change what you said or did. So right. Just let it be.
Yeah. I would have just doubled down and not even apologized. I would have just been like, yeah, we did it. It is what it is.
That's what Amir did. Amir was like, what are you talking about? But you know what? That's kind of on brand for Bill, right? Like, that's totally Bill Amir. Like, he's not going to apologize for any of that. I personally felt like Isaiah was in a position where Isaiah wants everyone to like him. He definitely pointed out, and I still think it's really sad he wasn't on the Dream Team. I don't know if that's the only reason, but it certainly seems like
Rod,
one of them.
Rod Thorne was on Golic and Wingo today and said that was not the case, that Jordan did not ask for Isaiah to not be on the Dream Team.
Yeah, I think that there's probably like three or four reasons, right?
Well, nobody liked Isaiah back then, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, Magic and him were tight at one point, but Magic was not happy with some of the stuff that was being said, right, at that time.
Yeah. So there was a whole lot of petty going on beneath the surface with Isaiah. Isaiah now wants people to like him. He's a person who, like, you know, is in the public eyes on TV. He's a charming guy if you meet him. So I think he, you know, is probably just wants people to like him and wants to set the record straight and explain himself, et cetera. And, like, I just don't know that you can explain it. I think you just got to let it be. Like,
I think that Isaiah also, part of him doesn't feel like he gets his just due, right?
Yeah,
like,
he was
on a team that went to three straight finals, that won two championships, and they were the uninvited guests, basically, of that era, right? They weren't aesthetically pleasing to watch, but he did beat Michael, Magic, and Larry in their primes, and no one else can say that. And he did it without another top 50 greatest player of all time on the roster. Joe Dumars was great. He was a great player at that time, but he's not a top 50 player in history. So he probably feels like, I don't get my just due.
Yeah, it's a good point. He has reason to feel that, right? I mean, the Pistons were like iconic in that era, you know? And for a lot of good reasons, and you know, as well as bad reasons, right? Like, there were the image of them as the bad boys, but they don't win without Isaiah, and I don't regard Isaiah as one of the bad boys. Like, to me, the bad boys were Rick Mahorn,
Lambeer,
Rodman, Lambeer, right? Like, those are the ones that were the enforcers. They were like hockey players out there. I think that the Last Dance, and this is what's fascinating about watching this and all the reactions that come out, okay? The one thing that you could say about Michael and the filter of The Last Dance is that because he controlled the rights to this footage, because he controlled the rights to this documentary, Michael is one of the executive producers. Esty Portnoy, Curtis Polk, they're executive producers on this, right? Those are Michael's business associates for 20 years. He has essentially final cut, right? I mean, I don't know if I would say he has final cut because he's involved in this. He gives notes, but he's one of the producers where he has like a pretty loud say in how things are going to go or what's in, what's out, how things are portrayed. I have been impressed in watching it with how candid he is. They're definitely coming up in this next week. There are topics that are unsavory for Michael Jordan that don't necessarily make him look good. Right. You know, the issues with gambling, the issues with the Republicans bought Nikes too. Right.
Right.
Harvey Gantt case. He gets into all of it. And I don't think I think there's an objective distance that Jordan has where he's like he's the leading actor in this story. But he's not. But it's not necessarily like a Jordan documentary. And like there's a couple of scenes where like I'm like, wow, he's letting people criticize him in the documentary, like that's coming up this week. You'll see, and not just people criticize him, like Barack Obama criticize him, right? Like these are going to be big moments when you see episodes 5 and 6 that you're like, I'm impressed Jordan let that in.
Well, you felt like this was these were the best your favorite episodes. And we have a Kobe sighting right here in these episodes.
Yeah. Episode 5 is actually dedicated to Kobe Bryant. It's not the whole episode, but it's like the first, I don't know, third of the episode is Michael and Kobe. It was cool watching that. There's just like a lot of stuff that Michael's mid-career, so on the rise. You know, the way the documentary goes, it kind of goes, it's a little This Is Us, right? It kind of goes in the foreground of the 97-98 season, but then they kind of flash back towards early Michael's career, early other people's careers. So you're kind of making your way through Jordan's rise, and like, you know, the middle of his career is when he starts to encounter a lot of controversy, right? Over gambling, over his personality, over his, you know, when he steps away from basketball for 18 months, like his father's death, his, you know, the rise of him commercially, but then also he doesn't take any political stands. Like, they're going to get into all of that starting this week. And I thought it was great. I thought it was very balanced. And for Michael to have, some level of control over this and allow people to say the things they say in these next couple episodes, I thought was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I am really interested to see the Kobe stuff, because even just the quick little teaser that they did with them kind of slapping each other on the butt and walking away from each other, I thought was cool. But if you're saying, you know, a large chunk of episode 5 is Kobe related, I think that's even more interesting. And you were the one that told us that he did that interview. Kobe did the interview, you know, shortly before he passed, which is incredible, too.
So I don't know. I heard that somewhere else. And then I've sort of been fact checking that.
OK.
I don't think that's accurate.
OK.
I don't know where it first came from. I think like somebody out there said that somewhere, and it kind of keeps getting repeated.
Okay, so it's not the case.
Yeah, I think he did that interview in the summertime.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't like a week before. I don't know where that came from, but it kept getting repeated. I want to point out that that's not true.
That is fiction.
Fiction. Yes. Fiction. Yes, that's my job, to start fact-checking things, which I have been doing this week. So that part of it was you could see in the interviews that Kobe does, he's got like this like summertime beard. Like,
oh, okay.
He's kind of like, you know, doing his summertime groove, and like he's all grown out facial hair-wise.
Well, you know what? Let's find out if Kobe Carl's got a quarantine beard or something like that. He's going to join us on the other side. So the head coach of the South Bay Lakers, we'll talk to him. Look, there's a lot of G League news actually going on right now.
G League news, and also a close personal friend of Phil Jackson's.
Right. So we could talk to him about a number of different things. So Kobe Carl's going to join us. Stick around. Momo hanging out. We've got 30 minutes or so left in the show. Sedano, 710 ESPN, back in 4 minutes. Sedano's show rolls on here on ESPN 710, on 710 ESPN. Mama Momo, Ramona Shelburne hanging out with us today, riding shotgun. It's all presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, like Kobe Carl, head coach of the South Bay Lakers, who's giving us the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. So, Kobe, thank you so much for joining us today. We were just wondering, because we were talking about, Kobe doing the interview for The Last Dance, and Ramona was saying it was done in the summer, that he had a summertime beard, and obviously we're all looking forward to the Kobe episode in episode 5. But we were wondering about your beard, and like, do you have like a quarantine beard? Like, what is going on in the Carl household during the quarantine?
My facial hair situation is a little 5 o'clock shadow. I can't grow a beard yet, so every 2 days I shave it off so my daughters and my wife enjoy kissing me.
I love that you say yet.
I deal with the same thing. My 5-year-old Kobe says the same thing to me all the time. Daddy, shave your beard. It scratches my face. And it's like, forget it. After a few days, it's just got to go.
Absolutely. I much rather value my daughter's kisses than a little facial hair.
Yeah, you got to do a little work, though. I don't know, what is it about quarantine that makes guys think that it's okay not to shave now? Like, what is that? What's that dynamic?
I mean, I don't know. I just think it's just like I'm lazy. Like I'm in my pajamas all day, for God's sake. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I haven't put on jeans in over a month. Like, what are you talking to me about? You know what I mean?
Me too. Yeah, I do these like TV hits and I don't even bother with pants. I'm like, I try
to maintain a fairly regular routine, but I never put on jeans anyways. That's the beauty of being a sports coach.
Fair.
Now, Kobe, you've been coaching the Defenders for a while, or the G League. What are they called now? Now it's the
South Bay Lakers.
The South Bay Lakers, right? I liked it when they were the Defenders. So that's cool. And over the course of your coaching career, you've had a chance to get to know Phil Jackson really well. I know you played for him, but you almost got to know him better since you've become a coach. How did that come about? How'd you reach out to him?
Well, when I was playing, my dad actually got me onto the idea of, it was during the lockout, reaching out to someone that you respect or you like or you're curious about their success. And so I started reaching out to the various people. The first guy was Chris Peterson at Boise State University, who was at University of Washington for football. And then a couple years later, I always respected Phil, and I was kind of under the impression, you know, he might be too busy or... but I think that I was at the point where I retired. So I reached out to him when I was playing in Italy, and we had a good conversation, and I got to know him. And the more I got to know him, the more I was intrigued. He was so much different than, you know, the people I've grown up around in the NBA.
What were those initial conversations like? Like, what did you guys talk about?
It was a lot of me talking, you know, asking questions. And I think that's a lot of our relationship is just picking his brain, asking, you know, how you got to this, what happened here, and, you know, what do you think about this, and why do you do this? You know, for those of you that know Phil, he doesn't talk a lot, so you have to ask the right question to get a response that, you know, that will give you something to benefit. Sometimes, you know, him not answering a question is an answer in itself.
So you go from talking on the phone, maybe going to lunch, and then at some point you actually go on a little retreat to go visit him up in Montana. How does that happen?
Yeah, it was when I started coaching. So I was an assistant in Westchester for a year under his regime, working for Mike Miller, who's obviously the current coach of the Knicks now as an interim. And I think it was maybe a year after I'd been a head coach.
Okay.
And you know, like I said, I've always been curious, and I reached out to him and told my wife that I was thinking about, you know, going to see if he'll let me visit him for a couple of days and just talk to him and learn from him and be around him. And there was a time in the summer where his family had kind of cleared out from Montana that he said it'd be a good time.
Tell me about the place in Montana, because I feel like we've seen pictures of it, like we see it in the videos, and we've seen it clearly during The Last Dance, because that's where he's doing the interviews. But what is what is that place like?
It's beautiful. You know, my wife and I were just talking about him the other day, obviously because the series is on. And, you know, he's not, to me, he doesn't seem like he's too outrageous with the things. He's not trying to buy the nicest car or anything like that. Uh-huh. But he's very thoughtful with the things that he does have. It's a unique house. I think it's suited for him. You know, a lot of open space. You know, one of the things, my mom went and visited him, actually, during one of her motorcycle trips, and she always likes to rave about he has stained glass windows for every championship they won. So it's a different, you know, color, different design. All of them have the triangle. You know, very unique.
Cope, the reason I wanted to have you on to talk about Phil is just that I think that the last 3-4 years, especially after things didn't work out in New York the way he wanted them to, or anybody wanted them to, his reputation's taken a little bit of a hit, right? Like, there's this feeling of, you know, he hasn't said anything publicly about it. I think a lot of people have, you know, the things that they maybe didn't like about him when he was winning, like, those get exaggerated after you lose, right? When you get humbled. You know, what do people in the game feel about him versus, you know, maybe what his public reputation might be?
I mean, I can't speak for other people, but I think that, you know, the coaches I've talked to when talking about him, I think there's always a respect for what he's done. You know, you can't debate that, you know, winning one championship is incredible, doing what he's done in his career as a coach and a player. is even more. So I think there's always a respect level for what he's done. I think there's a lot of confusion how he did it, right?
Yeah.
You know, the use of mindfulness, the triangle offense. And I was lucky enough to play in it and be around that group for a year and kind of get to know the ins and outs and why it works and you know, why it works for some people and why people perceive it a certain way. But I think there's always a mutual respect for what he's done, and I don't think anyone can argue it. And I think it's obviously in front of the world right now being with this new documentary.
Kobe Carl, the head coach of the South Bay Lakers, joining us here on the Sedano Show. George Sedano, Ramona Shelburne with us here. All right, so let me ask you about the triangle, because there's talk, right, that isn't a way you could play today, right? Now, look, I think it would have to be altered and it would have to evolve some just based on the way the game is played, you know, currently in 2020. But, like, how do you feel the triangle would evolve in today's NBA?
That's a good question. I think, you know, obviously it's all based off of Tex Winter's principles that he created. And a lot of them, you know, having an option to pass to each one of your teammates when you have the ball, 15 to 18 foot spacing at all times. A lot of these things are changing. So I think that would probably be the adjustment, is the spacing would probably be wider. You know, maybe putting guys in spots that are more conducive to shooting more three pointers. But, you know, that's not my expertise. I think the genius of the offense is that it's self-contained, and that the players can run it without the assistance of the coaching staff, and the creativity of the players is completely up to them, and they can choose wherever they want to go with it.
Now, you do you run the triangle with the G League team? Is that or do you run elements of it? How have you adapted that?
When we were in Westchester, we ran the triangle. So Mike Miller ran the triangle in college, and that's why he was recruited to be our head coach.
Okay.
So that was when Derek Fisher was running the triangle.
Yep.
So we ran it, and it was interesting because Mike Miller taught it differently than Phil Jackson and Tex Winters taught it, obviously dealing with a bunch of young guys who'd never ran it compared to when I went to training camp with them. They had already won three championships, and Derek Fisher and Kobe and these guys were, you know, savants at it. So you got to teach a little different, but, you know, an interesting anecdote was Mike Miller taught himself the triangle by watching those early 90s teams, and then he taught himself and then ran the triangle through his college. So, but yeah, we taught it that year, and in the G League setting it's very difficult because you need guys who know it. And it's a very structured offense with a lot of skills and fundamentals that are necessary, and it takes time to develop those.
Kobe Carl joining us here. Let me ask you this. Like, was there ever any hesitation for you going into coaching, considering you're the son of a coach?
No, not really. I just did a podcast with my dad. He has a Truth in Basketball podcast he just came out with, which is pretty fun for me to listen to.
Sweet.
And it was fun to be on there. And we talked about that, and I think there was some amazement. You know, why would you do that? All the stress, and, you know, there's plenty of stress growing up in my life. We moved over 20 times when I was younger, and, you know, I started and ended in the same school, like, not until fifth grade or something like that. It was, you know, like some of these crazy stories that created stress in my life, but I loved the community that the game creates. I loved the challenges and joys that it's brought to my life and the growth that it's created in my life. And it's basically, you know, where I've grown up is in the game of basketball. You know, the people who know my father, he's a basketball addict, fanatic, and that's who he was, you know, starting from Dean Smith and going into his own career.
Well, now in the G League, it's a different vibe because they have created this pathway for some of the best high school players to just go straight to the G League. It's become, and it sounds like a lot of them are going to be playing in Los Angeles. Do you know how the South Bay Lakers are going to be involved in that? Whether you're going to get to coach guys like Dacian Mix or Jalen Green, who have just jumped straight to the G League now instead of going to college?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the details. I know Rod Strickland was working with the G League over the last 3 years, and obviously Sharif had a big part in what it is now. Yeah. A couple other people were working on creating a path for our young, talented youth to stay in America. So I think that's the that's a win for us. I think that was, to me, it was a little bit of an embarrassment that the best athletes in our country had to go to a different country to play. And obviously there's a lot of talk of, with the NCAA system compared to, you know, the NBA and all that. And that's not for me to worry about. But I think the win that when I saw that is they finally got it done, that we're going to have our youngest players, most talented players in America, learning from hopefully, you know, our best talented players in the NBA.
Kobe Carl with us here, South Bay Lakers. Hey, Kobe, thanks for hanging out with us, man. We really appreciate the time.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
You got
thanks,
it. Take
Kobe.
Care. There he is, Kobe yeah. Carl with us here. All right, coming up next, Momo, I want to dive into some of that G League stuff. And
yeah.
The NCAA, by the way, trying their best to combat some of this by announcing something unprecedented. We'll tell you what that is in just a second. Stick around. Momo hanging out. Sedano, 710 ESPN. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Mama Momo hanging out. If you missed any one of our interviews today, Kobe Carl or Kenneth Williams, you can check them out on the Interview on Demand section, Sedano Show Podcast, Apple Podcasts, ESPN app, Spotify, Google, wherever you find your podcast. Brought to you by Capital One. With Capital One, you can open a new checking or savings account with no fees or minimums. Welcome to Banking Reimagined and what's in your wallet. Approval required. Capital One, NA member, FDIC. And tune into The Last Dance. We were talking to Kobe Carl about that. A behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Bulls dynasty. The series continues Sunday at 6 p.m. on ESPN television. And listen to the wrap-up show with Sliwa and myself on the ESPN Los Angeles Twitter account, broadcasting live after the documentary presented by State Farm, AT&T, Cincoro Tequila, and our friends at Coors Light. A couple of things, Momo. Since we were just talking to him about the G League situation and the pathway situation, the NCAA today is moving towards allowing students to profit off their name, image, and likeness beginning in 2021, 2022. I don't think any of that stuff is a coincidence.
Not at all. I mean, look, this was interesting. When Dacian decommitted from UCLA, I guess it's not decommitted, he just decided I'm going to the G League, right?
Yes.
That was kind of not kosher. That was not what was supposed to happen with the G League setup. The initial idea was you're not supposed to take players that have already committed to colleges, right? They're not supposed to go after those type of players to do that pathway to the G League. But I just think this year with everything in flux, like I don't know that we're having a college basketball season. Do you? Because
nope.
You know, if he's going to be a one and done guy at UCLA, probably. What if there's no one season? What if the one season is just, you know, totally different than what anybody has ever experienced? What if it doesn't even take place until next February or something, right? Like, and it's all thrown off. So I don't know how you can hold anybody to this idea, like you committed to a college when you can't guarantee them there's going to be a college season starting in the fall. So I don't, you know, that's why I think this is like hastened the players deciding to take that pathway. And as, you know, Kobe Carl was saying, is like, we want to keep our best players home. Like, do you know there's probably like four or five lottery picks that played in Australia this year, right? Like, you shouldn't have to go to Australia to play professionally after high school rather than, you know, if you don't want to play in college, you know, there should be a viable alternative here in the States. So that's what the G League's trying to do. And I also think NBA teams would much rather see players, you know, playing here in the G League than playing over in like Australia, because they know the level of competition. They can evaluate that better. Like, it's really hard to evaluate LaMelo Ball because of the competition he was playing against, right? The level of competition.
Right.
So the NCAA sees all this. It's an existential threat to them, but they were okay with, like, I don't know, 5 to 10 players a year going from high school to the G League.
Mm-hmm.
What they're not okay with is 30 to 50 players doing that. Right?
And guys decommitting.
Yes, and guys decommitting. That is much, much different. And I think that them moving towards letting players, you know, have their own say and their own rights to their likeness. Like, this is something I never thought would happen in the NCAA, and yet in within the span of like 3 years, it's changing already. It's it's a testament to how much social media has changed things, how quickly things can move now once things start to change. But also, I think, like, because guys like LeBron James and you know, NBA players with like huge megaphones have amplified this discussion, I just don't think there's any going back. I think this is all coming down.
Yeah, I'm with you. And it should. Okay. These kids have been at these big time programs have been taken for granted in a lot of ways. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you know, you're building stuff off their back when they're not getting paid. And I know we can talk about the cost of education or whatever. I get that. I'm not disputing that. But here's what I would say is that even that is not, like, I would say that that's not the requisite amount that one would be paid based on the type of money that's being made off of their backs. Like, I don't feel like that's, you know, enough compensation personally. And the other part of it is this. I know the black market exists, but not every player is getting the exact same amount in the black market. At least this could be regulated in a way that's more simple.
Yeah. I mean, that was the argument between the for the NBA to like sort of embrace gambling, right? Legalize gambling.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, just put it out in the open. Rather, you know, at least you can see what's happening if you're involved in it, if you have some say in it. But if you don't, then you don't know what's happening. And I think you're actually going to see far less corruption, and you're going to see far less, you know, of that, you know, what people are getting prosecuted right now for, you know, the recruiting of players and paying players to go to certain colleges and illegal inducements. Like, you'll see far less of that once you tear down those barriers, because the only reason players are sort of circumventing the system is because there's so much money involved, and because the system forces them to do that. It's like an unjust system. And so I just think all the walls are coming down, particularly for football and basketball. I don't know what the ramifications are going to be, George, for the other non-revenue sports, because basically the system was set up where football and basketball paid the bill for every other team sport in college, right? Like, they funded, like, you fund a whole athletic department based on what your football team does, based on what your basketball team does, but mostly football, right? So, the water polo team, the track team, the volleyball team, like, those are those lose money every year. And, you know, endowments have to step up, alumni, but, you know, there's going to be some consequences if you take away the profits that come from the two money-making sports, and they're not then propping up everybody else. I worry a little bit about that.
Are you ready for some breaking news? We have less than 2 minutes.
What do you got?
You and I were talking about this earlier about Aaron Rodgers. Brett Favre went on the Rich Eisen show and said this: I guarantee you it's got his wheels turning in Aaron's mind. Ooh. If that's the case, it means there's a chip on his shoulder towards the organization that was not there. At some point, it'll rear its ugly head. Favre said he spoke with Rodgers. I'm not going to talk about what we talked about. He was, let's just say, surprised they went in that direction. He has every right to be disappointed if he is. And he said, I think Aaron will finish somewhere else. That's my gut. Come on, dog. You're a bad liar. You said you talked to him. But you know what I mean? Like, get out of here.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Like, I have to do that all the time. And you do too, right? Because we have sources and people we talk to. And sometimes you like deliberately obscure who you've been talking to, or don't even mention that you've ever talked to them.
Because
it's too easy to figure out.
Yeah. But why'd you say you spoke to him?
Yeah. Brett's not used to that. He's not used to that.
Yeah. Aaron's like, probably like, dude. Yeah. Or maybe not. Aaron's probably like, go ahead.
Yeah. I've seen a few of those, right? Like, Peter King had a report like that. And
how, you know, weird is this though?
The other day.
How weird is this though? That those two who, again, remember, Brett Favre, I'm not here to mentor Aaron Rodgers, to all of a sudden those two guys being on the same page and being like, yeah, bleep them.
Yeah, well, look, you know, he can relate, right? Like, Aaron is the one who was drafted to take his job. I just think we have to be careful, though, because, like, we don't know if Jordan Love is that good yet. Like, Aaron Rodgers turned out to be really good, and that's why they got rid of Brett Favre, but we don't know. I mean, the Packers, guess who they drafted a couple of years ago? Brett Hundley. He was okay, the guy from UCLA, okay. But he didn't take Aaron Rodgers' job.
No. No, definitely not.
Let's see.
Momo, you are the best. Thank you,
George,
for hanging out today.
I love it. It's fun. I get to have something to do in the mornings that doesn't involve feeding my son and walking around the block.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on Mama Momo on Wednesday. And thanks to Greg. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to you guys for tuning in. Thanks to Kenneth Murray. Thanks to Kobe Carl. We will talk to you tomorrow at 10. See ya.